woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, don't face Action Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. And the board SP futures down a whole buck. And NASDAQ futures up $5. Dow futures down 10. So flat ahead of the deal signing this morning with China. And then we had the Democratic debate last night. And I don't know. I didn't watch most of it, but I got some of the best parts, I guess, Manny. I think the format that everybody comes out pretty much. I don't think anybody can ever shine in that format, to be honest with you. But anyway, that's one man's opinion. I mean, look what happened in the Republican debate. I think some people were really good candidates and never really got to talk. And I don't know what's happening with this one. The whole thing with Elizabeth Warren popping off things about a private conversation. I don't know where the evidence is to that, but. You mean you lob that one out there, all of a sudden it becomes a targeted thing, and then it's over. It's all the things we talk about on the show, there isn't any attempt on either side. I mean, you're not going to get Trump to talk about them, and these people are not going to talk about them. The stuff we're talking about and the long-term problems we have and things, I don't see anybody doing anything about it. And it pretty much, I'm going to say it sucks. That's just me. We have Kevin?
You do?
We do. Listening to my rant?
You do well. Yeah, I'm actually kind of amused by this whole Warren Sanders thing. You know, a couple of things. Yeah, Liz Warren would never bend the truth. So,
no, God, no.
You know, she's totally believable. But the part that got me about the debate, and I didn't watch the whole thing. But the sequence where the CNN reporter. Asked Sanders about it, and he says, "I never said it." And immediately, she turns to Warren and says, "So what'd you think when he said it?"
It's
what? He just said he didn't say it.
It is.
You know, it'd be maybe another way to do that. You know, if you really wanted to fact check it, is well, you say he did, and he says he didn't. You know, that might be an okay question, but it's like. I never said it. Oh, well, Senator Warren, what'd you think when he said it?
It's funny how
and I'm not exaggerating.
Oh, I know. It reminds me, Kevin, we were, Audrey and I, this was years ago when we were young and skiing. Audrey and I decided to, drive out the steamboat and, you know, get a spot. We're out there. We just, one of those things where work had been lousy for both of us, so we decided to go. So we bring Audrey's little poodle. Sam the poodle. He was black and he had one eye, so she named him Sammy Davis Poodle. anyway, so we're driving out there. We're about 2 hours from Steamboat. I call the central reservations. You know, it's middle of January, so I didn't think it was all that full. I said, you know, we have a little poodle with us. We'd like a pet-friendly two-bedroom condo. And the lady says, well, we don't have any pet-friendly condos. We don't allow any animals. And I said, well, okay, how about we start this over? We're 2 hours out. We need a two-bedroom condo. I got one right here for you. Sort of the same thing, right? I mean, and she didn't want to have us not stay any place. She goes, just put the dude at the disturb side. Nobody cares if there's a poodle in there. But talking about the happiest right. Little guy with the gas fireplace on, and he just found a little, what do you call it, a little footstool right in front of that, and he was the happiest little dude ever. This is pretty neat. Look right out the window, right in front of the fireplace. But so he enjoyed it. Oh, anyway. But it is kind of the conversation. You wonder. I mean, Maddie has said on several occasions, a couple times, he wings me a compliment. He says that most people who interview people never listen to the answer. They have their next question ready to go, and that's what they're staring at. And I'm sure that was an example of that, right, Matt?
I didn't see it, but I assume, yeah, that's very possible. I mean, they were the reporter had in their mind that this was said, and they wanted to get both sides' opinion on what was said, and asked Bernie, and he, while he's saying, I didn't say that, she's ready to ask Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah, she's loading up the next question here.
Yep.
And, Kevin,
you see that with the people who aren't as adept at being interviewed, where they're always thinking of, you know, formulating the answer rather than listening as the question's being asked. And so, you know, there is no pause between the question and the answer because the answer's already started to come out. And, you know, I have to coach people all the time in interviewing things like that, as well as, you know, dealing with questions when you're doing a presentation, or what do you do if you, you know, if you're sort of forgetting your script a little bit. And the answer is you take a little bit of a pause. You know, what seems like 20 minutes to you was really only 3 seconds to everybody else who's
right.
Listening.
Yeah, I would agree.
You would think that somebody working for CNN, I don't remember what the moderator's name is, but you'd think that if you do that for a living, you would be better at it.
You would think. Well, we have to get Cheryl Atkinson on to talk more about that. But, you know, Kevin, I wonder, I look
well,
at...
Oh, that, and plus, yeah. You know, she just had a big break in her case, too, which
yeah, well,
kind of interesting.
Well, I wonder when I look at this, I look at Elizabeth Warren, and I look at... what's the line? I've become what I detest. I don't think any of these people. I mean, clearly, to put yourself out there for your entire life, one campaign after another, those kinds of things, it is a huge price these people pay. Now, granted, they seem all to be getting very rich, which I still can't figure out how the hell they're doing that. The people with the books I get, but the other people, I'd love to have a guest in here explain to me exactly how Nancy Pelosi and. Who's the schmuck in the Senate married to? Well, he's married to the wife that gets all the stuff, McConnell. So she gets all this because she's on all the boards and all that stuff, or was. So I mean, I imagine he gets the money that way.
Yeah, you sort of know how it happened, but that's McConnell. Everybody else got rich too.
Yeah, yeah. What I'm saying, I'd really love to figure that out because when our buddy Doc explained this to me like 30 years ago, those guys were making way less money than everybody else, and they'd have two houses or two places to live. So it was not
awesome,
a place.
Isn't it?
What? They what?
I said, that's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you said you didn't want to be a rep rather than a lawyer in a law firm if you want to make money. These no reps were members of Beverly. All the law firm guys were. Anyway, so but the you wonder what I'm going to have to say that Elizabeth Warren didn't start out, I don't think, to be willing to say virtually anywhere to get her to the next step. And I mean, Trump, I think, has been that way his whole life. That's why people.
Oh, she may have, Tom, yeah. Because that the stuff about her heritage, she's claiming honest mistake. But you know, one of the real interesting things in her background is that that she clearly didn't put it on her Harvard application, which you might consider exonerating her. But then, how did Harvard learn to? Learn to tout it in their bios of her, et cetera.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
It's one thing on a legal document, a legal application, that will get you fired to withhold information, and then to turn around and spread that same information less formally is kind of an interesting scenario. So maybe she was always like that, because that was before she was ever a politician.
Well, it could be. As I will say this. And I would never come up with names, but I will unequivocally tell you that if you looked at the top 10 people in the city of Chicago or state of Illinois that have gotten minority set-asides, I will almost bet my last nickel that one or two of them are already minorities.
Or they're presidents of companies that are wholly owned by someone.
I'm talking about some very dark-skinned people that aren't black. that have no African-American heritage whatsoever.
Yeah, but that's, that, you know, that's a common scam is, okay, yeah. let me form a subsidiary.
Oh, the other one you're talking about, yeah.
African-American president to the subsidiary, and then the subsidiary will qualify for set-aside business.
Well, but part of that, and I, you know, I don't know why I'm going to be so straight here this morning. Part of that is because some of the minorities, that I, some of these people I know, this is not a general shot at anybody, don't want to do any work whatsoever, Kevin. Well, let me get this straight. I get to be 51% of a firm. I don't have to do anything, and I get paid. I'm all over that. I mean, it's not like the
I don't think that's anything to do with minorities.
Not like you don't have willing participants in the scam?
Yeah, well, I mean, oh, no, that doesn't have anything to do with minorities.
I think any person would take that deal.
But, you know, I mean, look at the amount of sniveling going on in Chicago now about minorities not being in this marijuana stuff. They never made any applications. It's a six-month project to put one of those things together. I happen to know somebody that tried his best for 5 months to have Mexican-American and Black and African-American groups put together and a couple of women groups, and he went around from month to month trying to get people together saying, this is the contribution, this is it, I'll do most of the work. I already have one of them, or I was successful before. Every group folded. Oh, we're not doing that. We're not putting up all that stuff about ourselves. We're not putting up $20,000 a pop. Well, how the hell do you think you get it? You don't think these people that got the original medical marijuana stuff didn't spend 6 months putting together some huge application with all the money behind it and did all that work? And all of a sudden, hey, well, how come these guys got it? Well, because they did it. There was no barrier the first time through. It was only $50,000 or something. It wasn't like there was a lot of money. It was a lot of work. You know, and all yep. of a sudden, hey, how come there's 15 white guys and now we're down to 10 because five have bought the other five? I mean, well, duh. And now all of a sudden we should just get one without even an application? Yeah, I'm just
saying. Yes.
Apparently, yes. And like you say, the minorities that get them will be, you know, I have a very dim view of this. Not because I have any problem with people getting ahead in this world, because everybody knows, I mean, I'll do anything I can to give anybody a break. And I don't care what color you are. So, I mean, I never did. But when I was trying to get the job on the expressway years ago, of course, it was me and my, you know, remember Jim Verbeck? He and I were going together.
Sure.
We must have gone 10 days waiting. Oh, we're not hiring today. And then I'm talking to all these black guys, right? I mean, not that I ever wouldn't. And I go, well, the guy goes, I'm in the same boat you are. I said, what do you mean? All they're trying to do is get some minority stuff. He goes, I'm not a member of the coalition. Because I might as well be white, the guy says to me. I said, explain this to me. He said, well, there's people that are involved in the politics of this, you know, either alderman or something like that. They're going to get the hirees, and they're going to get like 20% of somebody's pay or 10%. It's not just that you and I are going to get this job and we're going to make $10 an hour in 1973 or whatever the hell it was, because that's not the way it works. If you're in with one of these groups, you're going to get hired, and you're going to have to kick the guy a buck and a half an hour. I mean, that's why this whole thing, whenever these people talk about, we care so much about the person getting the job being an off color or whatever, Kevin, it's such BS. It has been for a century, for God's sake. Just saying.
Yeah, well, it's, yes, because whatever the rules are, there's always someone willing to make the rules. The rules only hinder people who intend to follow them.
Yes, absolutely. It's clear in our business, I mean, my business for sure. I mean, Bernie Madoff made his own rules, and before the guy became an absolute crook, made a fortune doing it by just walking all over other people, just walking through yeah. holes in the.
Well, and that's why you always find people who seem so willing to endorse new rules, because yeah, that's, you know, the suckers will follow them, not me.
Well, that's true. And the interesting part about Bernie's people, and he was big in a lot of the country clubs, and everybody, the whole story, he made it very difficult to get in. And the interesting part was, is my buddy from the guy I learned most of my option stuff with, a brilliant man, Marty O'Connell, Domer, so he got Notre Dame, then he went to Stanford for his MBA and his law school. He's a pretty smart guy. And he says, they all knew Bernie had an angle, and he was screwing somebody. They just were stunned. It turned out to be them. Which, you know what, Kevin? It sounds awful, but it's exactly true. I mean, the rest of the world's making 4%. Bernie's making 12. He's got an angle. Bernie's got an angle. Yeah, the angle was them. And it didn't feel so good. Would have turned around that way, right? As long as he was screwing somebody else, it was okay. Right? I mean, how does somebody make 10, 12% or somebody else make it 5?
We go back to W.C. Fields. You can't cheat an honest man.
Well, I remember when, I've mentioned this before, Nancy was running Nancy Drew Sheehan was running for treasurer, and I was helping on the committee and writing up the financial plan or helping people. Well, most of it I did, but Kevin, it was the world's easiest financial plan. The law was, if you're a state, treasurer, the states can only invest in U.S. government securities. So, okay, how big of an outlier if you have? I mean, if you and I bet a beer every year, and you were the guy in Iowa and I was here, the guy in Illinois, I'm going to say 1 year you bought more 5 years and I stuck with the 2 years and you made a tenth of a point better than I did. And I'm buying you a big steak in Iowa, right? And the next year I do 2 years and all of a sudden the 5 years come down and you're buying me a steak here. I mean, that's what 48 states were like that, or pretty much every state was like that, except for two. Harris County, Texas, they're making like 12%. In Orange County, the dip bleep in Orange County. The guy who didn't know anything was going on, but he ended up suing Merrill Lynch, but he lost all that money. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking at these two and I go, wait a minute. Everybody's making 4.2, 4.1, 4.11. The entire world, and these two idiots are making 10.5%. And I'm going, wait a minute.
Somebody going to ask what the magic is?
Yeah, somebody, what's the potion here? Well, they were doing repos, read this, read that, you know. And all of a sudden the thing blows up and the guys are like, what do you mean? I had no idea what these guys are doing. Yeah, but you love the 10% when all the other mumps are making 4. Hey, speaking of which, now that we have you here, what do you think about this science stuff? I mean, how do they think they're going to keep that a secret, Kevin?
Say it again?
How do they, the Astros with people going from team to team.
Oh, and, the sign ceiling. I mean, because, you know, guys do get traded. You know, when you get traded to a team and they're doing it to your new team, or you sign as a free agent or whatever, I don't know how they figured they would keep it under wraps.
The pitcher goes to you and says, man, it sure felt like you guys were stealing my signs. You big dope, we were. Right? I mean, how does that conversation not happen?
Well, and then you get on a new team, and you would think somewhere along the line people would have gotten better at countering it, too. Let's use it against them.
Well, I would guess, do you think that you and I and Maddie would be sitting behind the dugout, and by the third inning we go, what the hell is that drum? Or banging on something?
Yeah, I think they're probably the right solution would be every time you hear the someone bang on the trash can, you just throw at the guy.
Well, that would work, too.
Go ahead, bang on it again. Go ahead.
In the old days, was it the they claimed DeRosa was cheating when he won the pennant in 57 or whatever? Somebody back there.
Don't know. What was the story there?
Well, they had a guy in the scoreboard, like the old Wrigley, had the scoreboard at Ebbets Field, I think, was the same as the...
they were all that way once.
Yeah, and they had some guys out there with binoculars, and I think somebody in the dugout was looking out there with binoculars. But I seem to recall, you know, from watching games in the 60s, I won't say the 50s, I don't remember those, but, God, as soon as the guy got the sign, he threw the ball. God, I don't know how you had a chance to get that information to the batter out of the dugout, from the scoreboard to the dugout to the batter. I think they were banging on something too, but still, that was awful. I mean, you watch those guys pitch. I mean, they just got the ball. They looked. They were like, what's his name? The guy in the Cubs, Heinrich. He stares at the catcher. He sees Hendricks. The sign, and Hendricks, and he turns and throws. Right, Matty? Now, how could you possibly get that guy information between the sign and that pitch if it's coming through two people?
Yeah, it'd be pretty difficult, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I almost would think that they, if you're going to do it, you'd have to have an earplug in the batter's ear, which I think is probably illegal. But again, how would you ever know?
Well, and anything electronic is illegal at this point.
Well, let me ask you this: why, since most of these signs come out of the dugout now, well, I don't know why that is. You'd think the catcher would learn how to do it, but most of the managers call it. Why don't you just put an earplug in the pitcher and the catcher? You're doing football. You got a mic in the helmet.
Well, we may evolve to that. That might be the easy way to do it, and it would speed up the game, wouldn't it?
Well, maybe we would evolve to just have it naturally in our ear. We wouldn't even have to do it. We just grow one.
That would be even better, yes. And,
yeah.
And only the people who evolve that way can play Major League Baseball.
Maybe we should evolve where everybody has a chip that grows naturally in your wrist, so you don't need like credit cards and stuff.
Well, we're getting there.
By the way, would you ever? It's hard to say would you ever because you're an old farm. How soon before everybody's chipped?
Well, we have some years to go down there. Although the guy from the Bernie campaign who was talking about re-education camps that in the videos that got released this week, that guy might be chipping all the people who have to go to re-education camp.
For those who are unclear on this story, I believe that there's a company in Wisconsin that's requiring it. Been there? Maddie, didn't we talk about this?
I remember reading something where, I don't know if they were requiring it, but they were giving employees the option to do it so they wouldn't have to carry around key cards and things like that to get into the...
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Yep.
Yeah, different areas of the facility, and certain people were doing it.
Well, it goes in your wrist, you just wave your hand over the thing or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Or just get close.
I don't know. I was trying to get it seemed to indicate that it wasn't like a block away. The thing was beaming the signal. I don't know, Kevin, but they were...
No, but once you're chipped, then all kinds of interesting things can happen.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think guys were like paying for their lunch and everything with it, weren't they, Betty?
I think so, yeah. I don't remember the article.
I don't remember. I think it was more than just a suggestion.
I'm sure the convenience is tremendous, but, you know, is it worth the price? Is it worth the potential price?
Well, it would be convenient to saw your left arm off at the elbow and attach your hand there so when you hold out your phone like everybody does, you don't have to crunch your arm up. It just would be that long, right?
Yes, that would be convenient. Price is definitely too high. So now we've established some extremes. So where's the line?
Well, the interesting part is the song was what in the year 2525. You don't need arms and legs. In fact, you need the third arm to hold the phone.
I don't think I ever saw the whole lyrics to that song.
I don't think I did either. I used to be able to recite some of it, but most of it. But yeah, but it was you don't need something to be alive and whatever. Anyway, so we're signing this deal today. The market seems to have calmed down quite a bit on this. The entire, out of all the crises I think I've ever seen, Kevin, going back to the Russian debt crisis and Argentinian, even the thing over in, was it Cyprus, Italy, this thing in Iran was what, 4 days? And now it's over, it's off the front page?
It was probably a little more than a week, all told.
But about maybe five trading days.
You got to go back to the you got to go back to the contractors getting killed, and then the retaliation, and then the storm in the the attack on the embassy, and then the killing the general. So it all kind of strung together for probably 10 days or so.
Yeah, we're back and forth, and now it's back to wherever we are, square zero or someplace. Not. By the way, that's a terrific outcome. It's better than bringing body bags back, no doubt about that. It just seems
I'm glad it worked out the way it did. I don't think it's entirely worked out either. The Israeli news media today is reporting that. Let me pull it up here. That the Israeli defense. What do they call them? IDF, Israeli Defense Forces, reporting that Iran will have enough plutonium by the end of 2020 for a bomb, and they will have the capability by within 2 years of delivering it via ballistic missile.
They have no ability to have an airplane that flies it? They must have a plane.
Well, I'm sure they do, but the airplane will get shot down. It's, you know, if an Iranian... jet takes off for Israel now. It's not going to make it. They're watching everything.
Well, I've watched enough TV to know that if you go about 50 feet off the ground, you might make it.
Yeah. So what you do is though is you you take it as obviously Israeli media might will probably have its own anti-Iranian agenda. So you take it as as a thought, but sort of needs further validation. But the point of that would be that they couldn't have been doing that if they were adhering to the nuclear agreement in the first place.
Hey, when you come back, a quick story about that flying low, and then I'm going to ask you a little bit about the conversation with Jeff yesterday. I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, and I didn't get to listen to it because I had to run into a meeting. But so you're going to have to catch me up.
Well, I also have to get you a copy of this.
What you discussed, but I did see some of the notes from it, and I'm going to listen to it, you know, sometime today.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to definitely dive into this Luckbox magazine all weekend. I mean, I'm going to dig through this. This is it's all about the rating different agencies and so forth. And these guys do some good work. SP Futures still down a buck. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Blowing up face Dyson Giants. Tom Tomari's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures not on 3.25 and NASDAQ Futures down 4. Still, you know, not doing much. Still kind of flat. Individual stocks. Apple down another 63 cents. Still 312 though. They were, downgraded by somebody yesterday to, actually to a sell. Because just on valuation. Goldman Sachs came out. They beat on the bottom line over. They're only up 9 cents. So not much going on there. Dow Jones down 10 around the rest of the world. We've got over in Europe. DAX down 7, call that flat. FTSE up 14.1%. CAC round down 4, call that flat. So we're pretty slow here before this thing being signed. I can't imagine what's going to go wrong with the signing, so I don't know what everybody's waiting for that for. Nikkei down 108.4%. Shanghai down 16.5%. Hang Seng down 111.4%. So generally a little slower over there. U.S. 10-year, 1.79. Bund minus 0.20. So all these guys are, the rates are down a little bit. Japan back negative. They're 0.01% to the positive. Wow. So, it's 2 days in a row that they're above ground. Oil, unchanged. We have unchanged it wherever it was. We can't get the prices here. We'll get the oil and gold prices later. We have no problem with the CNBC site. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start, actually, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson looking great. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking good as well. Only crash right now is from an earlier crash on the Veterans Memorial I-355 southbound just before 22nd Street. There was an earlier accident, and there's still some debris on the road that's being cleared right now from that crash. That's causing a bit of a slowdown on the southbound side. But no other issues to report on the area expressways. We do have an issue, Randall Road at Out Lane in Elgin, northwestern suburbs. And then in Hanover Park, Rodenburg Road at Central Avenue, there is a crash. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, not a great weather day. Clouds, some precipitation in the area, a rain, sleet type mix with highs in the mid-30s. Could touch 37 downtown for a high. Right now it's overcast and 34 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a nice day, partly cloudy skies with a high of 72. Right now it's mostly clear and 43. In sports, Blackhawks with a nice road win up at Ottawa, 3-2 in overtime. Coyotes blew out the Sharks, 6-3 down in Phoenix. NBA basketball, Suns lost at Atlanta to the Hawks, 123-110. Bulls were off. They'll host the Washington Wizards tonight at the UC. College basketball, DePaul with a valiant effort last night at number 14 Villanova, but fell just short in overtime, 79-75. Northwestern was blown out at home by Iowa, 75-62. Chief.
Iowa's looking good. Northwestern's looking bad, but
I was at the game last night because Jill graduated from Iowa, and I went there, and Jill's mom, my fiance, her mom got us tickets as like a stocking stuffer, which I thought was very nice. And we went up to the new Welsh Ryan Arena, which they renovated and opened last season. And it's a nice little arena. It's small, but it's good for Northwestern, and it's clean and nice, and it's all seats now. It used to be bleachers for 75% of the arena. Now it's all seats. And it was good. Iowa is ranked 25th in one of the polls, and they're like 26th in the other. So they're a good, solid team, tournament team, probably like a sixth seed or something in the tournament. But Northwestern just doesn't have any talent this year. I mean, they look terrible. And Iowa was up by 20, and I think the final score was by 13, but the game was not that close. No. Collins got them to the tournament 2 years ago, and everyone kind of graduated, and he just hasn't been able to reload. And they've just been, the Big Ten's really good this year, and I don't see them getting out of 14th place out of the 14.
They used to get a lot of kids from the Chicago area, and I don't think they are anymore.
Yeah, I'd have to look at their roster. They have one good freshman that I thought was a pretty good player and a pretty good sophomore, but they have no depth. They don't really have any size, and they just weren't very impressive. And a couple years ago, that was a good team. That team with McIntosh and Vic Law and Pardon. I mean, they had three or four really good guys that were like good enough to play professionally, like in Europe. You know, they're not going to get NBA players, but if you can get four or five professionals that can play in Europe. You can make the tournament, and they did, and they made it to the second round and almost made it to the Sweet 16, and they just haven't been anywhere close to that since.
At least they get one. Didn't they riding those two kids. Were they from New Trier? Kevin Stack and Boyle. They rode those guys for 3 years a while back, and they've had some guys from the Chicago area, some tall kids. But like I say, it's sort of tough for these the state, the Big Ten. I mean, it's just, I was stunned when I saw Iowa play. And I'm thinking, I remember them saying they had a couple guys hurt, and I'm going, God, how good are those guys? And they're middle of the road. But
they'll finish probably Iowa, probably I would say anywhere between fourth and eighth.
Who's going to beat them in the Western Division?
Well, they don't do divisions in basketball.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
Not just football. So it's just you play 20 games. You play every team at least once, and then you play, what would it be, 10 of the 14 teams twice, or 9 of the 14 teams twice. So your schedule can really be different than some of your opponent's schedules in the conference, and that kind of sucks. Because it was when the Big Ten was 10 teams and you played everyone twice for 18 games, that was pretty cool, which is what the Big East is now.
Yeah. The Paul started out like a house of fire, and then they came back. Anyway, Kevin, real quick story on the when you talk about flying a plane into Iran and how tough it would be. Well, let's hope it is tough. We don't want them doing it, but There's a book I think, I like, a lot of people should read. I won't say everybody because it's not everybody's taste. A book called A Man Called Intrepid, about a guy named Bill Stevenson, who was the head of a British Secret Service during the war. And this, when I judge people that are trying to think and run a country or whatever, all I do is read about this guy, and I'm sitting and to say my judgment is a little higher. The dude was world-class mathematician. He was a light heavyweight champ boxer in Britain for like 3 years. Was one of the original inventors of television. And they brought him into service, when they looked like they were going to go into a war. And the dude would read the equivalent of a Victorian novel like every day. And was just, stone cold brilliant, and made policy and convinced that he knew where every Secret Service guy was everywhere. And one of the things that they would do is they'd fly people into France for there was a lot of stuff going on behind enemy lines, because obviously France had a resistance. And the planes, if you wanted to fly in, which of course you wouldn't have wanted to do, they had these little planes. They call them moon planes or something. There was little pot-bellied things. They could land pretty much anywhere, right? They're black. So there wasn't room for you. If they were going to fly you into France, first of all, both of us are probably too big, but they'd open up a thing on the bottom and you got stuck in the bottom of the plane. So you better wear some pretty, warm clothing, freeze to death on the way over. And they would fly over so low that they didn't know how good the German radar was. Turns out it wasn't that good, but they thought it was better. They would fly over so low that if the water was, somewhat rough, they'd have to have the windshield wipers on, because the thing would actually get splashed.
Because it would splash them, huh?
Yeah. And then there'd be a guy over in France, or wherever it was, Belgium, he'd come out with like one flashlight in the middle of a field at a prescribed time, and he'd flash it like one time. And that's where you had to aim for the light, and you landed right there. Hope it was your guy. The guy pops out of the bottom, and off the guy went. It wasn't on the ground a minute and a half. All of a sudden, the guy is in a field with hopefully among friends, and that's how they got guys in and out. I mean, usually there was a guy coming out too. They'd slap another guy in and take him back to Britain. And, you think of things like...
So is this what happened when Hogan would smuggle somebody back to London?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And, but anyway, this guy, you talk about this, what happened to the dude in Iran. He was in the U.S., like before the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And, of course, the submarine warfare was going on. And they got wind in New York of a guy who was essentially smuggling the convoy information to the Germans. And they noticed he wasn't in his hotel room one night for like an hour. And they said, "Where were you?" And he goes, "Well, this guy that's been doing this stuff, I had to go see him." Guy goes, "You had to go see him?" "Yeah, well, we don't have to go see him anymore." "What do you mean?" One chop. Guy was out for good. And so they took care of guys in those days too a little bit, that you knew were bad guys. So it's not like it's new, I think if I knew somebody was giving convoy information and people I cared about were on the convoy, I'd probably be a little vicious too. And I'm not that way. Just saying. But anyway, to Jeff's stuff yesterday, I was kind of surprised. Jeff and I usually don't sort of disagree on much, but he didn't really have any kind of a sense of passing of the weekly magazines. And I really thought, Kevin.
Okay, I did hear a little of that while I was driving. Yeah,
and I really, boy, was I? I don't think I was the only guy. I remember the one of the Middle East wars. You know, I was hearing about it on TV. I was trading, and you're getting bits and pieces of the story. I really couldn't wait. I mean, there wasn't an internet back then, but even so, you don't see big long exposés that much. I couldn't wait till I get my U.S. News and Newsweek that week. You know, ran to where I could read the darn things, and for 14 pages, there's all these maps of here's where the Palestinians are, here's where these guys are, here's where the Israelis are, and they got this much. I mean, the entire explanation of everything that I had heard bits and pieces of the week before, I really thought that that's what the news magazines were for, and they were really good at it. You actually got the entire story after people got a chance to actually spend a couple of days putting the truth together. And you know, putting maps together and things like that. And I thought they were amazingly worthwhile because you actually got, especially if you read two of them, if there was any kind of, somebody had a bias in one, you usually lost it in the other one. And I really miss them, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't get them in my house anymore. I don't think they deliver them, do they?
Yeah, as you were having that part of the conversation, I tweeted, I waited for the stoplight, sent out a tweet. If you want that kind of analysis, it's available in subscription services. So you have to subscribe to the magazines anyway. Although you did say you took the free version until it ran out.
Well, it was never free, but you had a special
or the free trial. Yeah. But the suggested Stratfor.com, but it's not the only one out there. They do that, and Stratfor's business is being informative. It's really built for people who run multinational businesses, or even businesses that are primarily domestic operators. And so, what they do is they report the news and do analysis, and there is no partisan filter, because if they do that, then they are not, they don't have any product to sell. Their product is that they will tell you what's really happening, and they're incredibly sourced. The owner of CEO has been called a shadow CIA operative, because he has so much information that others don't. And their bias is—it's darn near impossible to discern any. That they just look and they tell you what they see and what they think is going to happen as a result of it. And it's pretty refreshing. You can follow them on Twitter and get some content that way. If anybody wants to try them out.
Well, we were one thing about
and then see what you think. But then you can subscribe, and it's going to probably cost you a couple hundred bucks a year.
Well, we used to, when I was in high school, we had a history teacher. I don't know if his first name was. Chouinard was his last name. Really, really good guy. And somehow or another, Kevin, and this is the way I learned. I mean, when you learn one way, you just, you get stuck in the mud. But I never really liked sort of half stories on stuff. And I know you don't either. But whenever he talked about a country, I don't know where the hell he would get them. But he'd get all these slides of a... what I'd love to see right now, and I don't know where, I'm sure, like you say, it's available, and I just don't know how to find it, but if somebody was teaching me about Iraq, I want to know right now, okay, what were the boundaries the day before we invaded? Who was where? Where were the Shia? Where were the Sunnis? Where were the Kurds? Were there any areas that were, internally hot spots, not hot spots? 3 years later, what did the place look like? Now what does the place look like? There's a progression. Now I'd wonder, okay, where's the quote American areas? Where's the Iranian areas? Without seeing that kind of a progression, I don't know how you put your mind to what's going on over there. Other than you jump on the right or the left, or you pissed at this guy, or you like that guy because you don't have any of the way to form your own opinion. I don't think. Does anybody?
Yeah, there was some stuff that that I remember seeing as the ISIS battle was. was really big as they grew, and then as when the United States decided to go back after them, you know, how it shrunk again and what the ISIS-controlled territory was. So I know that kind of stuff does get published once in a while.
I saw it on Syria. A lot of stuff on Syria, I agree. I haven't seen anything recently in Iraq, you know, that would explain all the stuff that went on in the last 2 weeks. But the Syria stuff, yeah, there were all kinds. There was a reasonable amount of, you know, ISIS has the northwest quadrant here and that kind
of
thing.
But ISIS was also Iraq.
Yeah, well, that front... Can anybody even tell if you're standing on it where the border is between Syria and Iraq? Is it one of those kind of deals where you're just kind of in the middle of nowhere? I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking it is, but in some areas. It's like the border between Arizona and Mexico where the river isn't there. Where the hell is it? I mean, where the Rio Grande is, it's pretty obvious, but any other place, is it?
I don't know. I don't. There's not always a stripe there, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not like a 50-yard line or anything like that.
There's no yellow line there?
There's no yellow line. Like the
No yellow line, and this is the one, you know, this is field goal range. And yeah, there's the state line, here's field goal range, and here's the red zone.
Well, because, I mean, on both sides of the northern part where Syria is, pretty much the Kurds are in northern Iraq, and they're in northern Syria, right? And it's... And then there's that area's got to be almost homogenous, even though it's two separate countries. And that's the whole issue with the Kurds, right?
Yeah, they live, you're talking about information that I just can't speak to intelligently.
I'm just saying, but you know, the fact that you know, I do talk about it from time to time. I'd like to know what the hell I was talking about more than, you know. I mean, I think I'm trying to, and I learn a lot from the listeners, but clearly it's not. I'm going to try that Stratford place because does anybody even? I guess my point is even the people in Congress know? Well, were they outpeeped their opinion? What actually is there and who's where and when? And what?
I think there are people in Congress who know. It's just how many and how many don't know. Every once in a while, you see some tweets from people that says, "Oh my God, he or she doesn't know poop."
Yeah,
but. But otherwise, you know, some of them, especially the ones that have been around for a while and they're on committees, they're pretty well educated in all of this stuff, even if it doesn't come out very often.
Well, also kind of wanted your opinion. We were digging in yesterday. We covered a lot of topics and with Brendan, and those guys are easy to have together, boy. I mean, because they really play off each other. Jeff and Brendan,
It's really a shame nobody likes that Brendan guy, though.
Yeah, no kidding.
He's not very likable.
No, he's a... I love giving him grief about
that. I learned yesterday that he's a catcher. He was a catcher when he was...
Well, if you saw him, he would be a catcher. Player. He's about 5...
He looks like a catcher and a wrestler.
Yeah. He really does not look like...
Yeah, I can see the wrestler, yep.
He does not look like a marathon runner at all, but, I mean, you would never guess by looking at him. But he obviously, he's done 100 of them, so I guess he is a marathon runner.
So I guess he counts, yep.
Yeah. But I'm giving him grief about the stem cell treatment. He had some in his Achilles. He's got a issue with his Achilles, but it's not across, it's vertical. It kind of separated. So he's in a walking boot and no surgery, but they gave him some stem cell treatments. And I go, you should have gone down to South America where they put the needle in and they stem cell your whole body. You get all new, the whole thing. Everything works like you're 30, allegedly. I don't know about that, but...
Everything?
Well, that's... Yeah, everything. I don't know about that.
Okay. I'm going to need to check that one out.
Well, we need a guinea pig. We got to send somebody down there and see if it works or they come back in a box. Maybe the shock could be too much for your system. All of a sudden, you were young again, Kevin.
Yeah, that probably would be true. You know, I was hard enough on myself when I was young.
Yeah, but anyway, we're talking about, you know, what is fake news and what sort of isn't. And I think one of the things, I mean, you see the same sour pusses on TV in terms of people in Congress. So everybody has this massive impression that one of the biggest problems we have in the country is term limits, and there's basically no turnover. And yet I think anecdotally, at the lower ends of both the Senate and the House, we have more turnover than we've ever had. In sort of in a bad way. People get there and spend 2-4 years and say, I'm not doing anything here. I'm out of here. I think the stratification of the people that were there, and I don't know, I have no idea what the house was like in 1948 or something, or 57, or maybe it was always like this, but it sure seems like a few people really control all of 435 people. I've read some stuff that says it wasn't always quite that way, that the committees and then other people will say that they've shaken up some of the committees, that it's not just dead seniority. And to be honest with you, Kevin, I don't know which is right. We've got Russell here. Maybe he can opine in. But
I swear, I thought the first thing I heard when I walked in was only four or five people control the porn.
Oh, no.
That's what I thought. I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be fun this morning.
What makes you think that isn't true?
That's an industry I don't really teach about or know much of. I don't know anything about that.
I'll tell you what.
Sorry. Well, I know. I come in with 3 minutes to go.
A magic quadrant on it.
Well, I tell you what. And I don't know where you can find it. The history channel. I'm not porn. That we all know where you can find it. But
yeah.
the History Channel had it probably was a 4-hour set, Manny, on the history of pornography. It was absolutely spectacular in terms of every economic rule, every human behavioral rule was in that industry. I mean, the fact that it was somewhat illegal, not illegal in some areas, and then,
mm-hmm.
but just the idea of how it worked its way out of essentially the closet. And you know, the old movies were 8 millimeters. You know, where people actually had the thing, and you play it. I mean, the history of it. I mean, it's like, this is the guy that wrote the book from the University of Chicago that how gangs are organized just like a corporation. You know, and how mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. But this, the whole industry was from the get go. There were only like 3 or 4 players involved. It was all run by a couple of mob kind of places. And there was no free porn. You didn't get to take pictures of naked people and then all of a sudden get them in every magazine and every porn shop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had to know the right people. The history of it was just fascinating as a humanity piece.
Okay.
Not just because you're taking pictures of naked people.
Okay, what was your question? I'm gonna put you, since I took you off track.
Oh, the question was...
Yeah, you've totally lost...
We're trying to get some
Russell kind of, now.
Yeah. We're trying to get some kind of...
In terms of tracking the conversation.
Well, what I think is happening in terms of the seniority in Congress is the people that somehow get to the spot where they they have some power stay there like a real long time, and all the rest of the people that are there that are allegedly equal... You know, one of 435 in the House are leaving in droves because they're not getting anything done on both sides. And they're almost like useless being there. And I think a lot of people are not as attuned into the second part of that story as they are the first. And obviously it looks like we've been watching Nancy Pelosi for a century, right? But I think we've seen massive turnover in the bottom rungs where people get out there for 4 years and say, I'm not doing crap. What am I doing here? And are leaving. So I think we not only have the no turnover, but we have a way too much turnover is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
To where I'm not so sure it's working very well, because I think if
well, yeah, I mean, you sort of think of it, same as you would in business, that turnover, when new people come in, if you were to just sort of plot, productivity or effectiveness or whatever you want over time, it starts out low and it goes on a curve upward, and that's, that would be just normal for any job that you do. And so if you have a lot of turnover, you have a lot of people who are on the low end of the curve. And that's not good. That's not productive. I don't think that invalidates term limits, because they're, every single job in the world is not occupied nearly as long as some of the jobs in the House and the Senate. What's the average life of a CEO at a company? Is it 10 years? Is it 20? There are companies that have long-time CEO, someone who's been there 20, 30 years, something like that, but most of the time CEOs, will log 10, 12 years someplace and then off they go. Same thing with key managers and so on. So there's a place in between where you can be, is what I'm saying. Where it's really okay to have some turnover for people to move on to get some fresh blood in there. You just don't want it all at once.
Well, when Carl was on maybe 4 or 5 times ago, and he was telling us how he worked for his buddy, young Republican guy, we only got 30 seconds here, to to win a House seat, and he did. And he got there, and he went to the orientation, and they basically told you if you had to use their cell phone that they could sort of track. And if you didn't, you didn't get
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's the whole control thing that's part of that. It's really, at what point does it stop being service and, public service, and does it start being your career?
But then again,
your only career. Who? And, so there is, there's a spot in the middle there where, we really need it to still be public service.
Well, but I we got a dash here, but there's 435 of us all get elected on the same day. Where do I get the power to tell you that if you don't use the cell phone I want you to use, you don't get a committee thing?
I mean, if you are tied to the speaker and the speaker controls the committee appointments, where you get.
Well,
the
I'm
power.
Saying I think that's there's too much there. That's my criticism.
No argument with me.
All right, but we'll talk to you on Friday. SP futures up, down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 9. We've been up, we've been down, we've been pretty much flat most of the day. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Well, welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. Tom Howe, it's Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber. Has there ever been a more incredible line in all of poetry and song with a, or something happening here where it isn't exactly clear? I mean, is that pretty go for every situation you've ever been in, including baseball and side stealing and everything else? Why, these guys can't hit today. What seems to be the problem?
Yeah,
or the guy can't, or they can hit today.
They seem to know exactly where the ball's going half a second before it gets there.
Hey, Manny, I have a question for you. Was that both ways? Were they trying to steal signs out of the dugout from a? How hard is you know? I never.
All I heard about is they were telling their hitters what pitches were coming. That's all I heard about.
Yeah, they basically were flashing a little light to give them what the signal was. I understood.
There was a light. There was a drum that they were banging. There was all kinds of stuff. And it was telling pitcher either, you know, breaking ball or fastball. And if you know that going in and you're a professional hitter, that is a huge advantage, obviously.
Especially if you can't hit a breaking ball, you don't swing.
Right, yeah.
And half of them end up in the dirt, right?
And make you look silly.
If you're a Dodger fan... who, you know, lost in the World Series to these guys. I mean, if you're one of those teams that, you know, for all intents and purposes, are doing things the right way, and you lost to these teams in the last couple of years, I mean, that sucks.
Yeah.
Why no forfeits?
I don't know. I was a little surprised by that. They lose the draft picks. They get the big fine. They lost their jobs, the managers and the general managers,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, that's a pretty good punishment, but why not vacate the World Series trophy? I don't know.
They would do it to him in the NCAA.
Damn right.
Yeah. Take that banner down.
Yeah. So my buddy Greg, who's been on the show before, he has one of them been big on royalty, but that royalty now is owners of major league teams. That is our royalty. That no matter what, you can't go after one of those guys. You never say this couldn't have happened if the owner didn't have either a culture of whatever cheating or he didn't know about it. There's no way that guy didn't know about it. You can't. You'll never get me to believe that the owner of the Astros.
I can make an argument both ways on that.
Well, so could I.
I really can. I'm just.
But I'm saying, how widespread does it get?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every player, the players on the other
team
don't know about it. Well, I'm saying,
yeah.
But then it goes to that player goes to the Dodgers, and he goes, "Man, it sure seemed like you guys were stealing my signs." Well, we were, you big dope, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it gets to that coach. You think the coaches that go to these coaching conventions and stuff, how do you think
they only have a couple of cocktails and run their mouth at the,
that's why.
At the winter meetings?
Baseball and football, that's why people go there. The coach gets fired from, pitching coach gets fired from one place, he goes to the meeting, he walks out, he's a pitching coach somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, you think these guys, that every secret isn't known? It's like traitors. You think anybody in the floor didn't know somebody else was a sleazebag and be careful about trading with them?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it lasted. The secret lasted about a minute.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're talking about the.
How did they figure it out? How'd they catch them?
I think it just was such common knowledge that
it just became common knowledge. They started to look into it.
Yeah. What was the smoking gun? You think, man? Did they go back on film and find the guy with the camera or what? They
must. I'm going to dig into this because I should know. But something told me that an opposing coach, like third base coach, was tipped off on it and reported it to somebody, reported it to his manager or his general manager or whatever, and then they tipped off the league office to watch out for it. I seem to remember something like that happening, and then the league office did a huge investigation and went back and looked at all kinds of video and things like that, and then it blew out from there. Then people started talking.
It was like 100,000 emails?
But yeah, and there was, you know, a huge thing. But I feel like the very first thing was, you know, one of those third base coaches is listening to this damn drum the whole game.
Yeah.
And it just, it starts to
click. Yeah. Like, wow, they're hitting the drum every time a breaking ball is coming. Like, and it started to click after a while. I'm pretty sure that was the beginning, but I'll have to do a little more research.
Well, you think it would get to you if you're standing right there.
Yeah.
What if you're sitting right behind a dugout? What the hell is that drum? Right?
Yeah.
Right, Russell, you were talking about the labor numbers.
Yeah. So late yesterday, when you were probably holding court over at the Board of Trade building.
I was in the swimming pool.
Okay, when you were holding court in the swimming pool. I was watching the business networks, playing a little catch up at home, and there was what they considered some breaking news that the way that the monthly employment number is going to be disseminated to reporters is going to change. And previously, all the reporters get to go in, they get the number early so that they can stand there in front of the camera and look really smart the second that the embargo is lifted. You know, this many jobs were added in December, and here's the revision from November, blah, blah, blah. They would be able to go through that, and the information would pop up on Bloomberg and whatnot. Well, they're not going to do it that way anymore. They're basically just going to slap the numbers up in the release up on the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, and we're going to get to have a free-for-all. Which is a better way to do it. You know, you and I have talked multiple times about how it appears in the trading a minute or two before some of the really big numbers that somebody has gotten tipped off because the market always seems to move in the right direction. And one of the ways that they could get tipped off, I'm not saying that that's why they've chosen to go this route. In fact, you think it's probably for another reason, but the reason that they're going to this route is just so that the information is not released to anybody until the moment
except
that
the
it's
right
supposed
guys.
To be.
Except
but
the right guys.
The president will get the number the day before. We've always known that. I believe Clinton slipped and said it once, or I think each administration at one time has slipped and said something, or each of the last three or four administrations have hinted at it in comments maybe a day before the number and just kind of made a mistake around it. Trump did it, but I know that it's happened before as well.
So the headlines are saying that the Trump administration are the ones planning to restrict the news.
That's exactly
so
who
it's
has
coming
decided
from
to
them. Okay.
Yes, exactly who has decided to implement this.
And I very rarely agree with any decisions they make, but I agree with this.
Why?
I'm getting out of the way.
No, I'm just. No,
he's asking why.
No one cares about my opinion, but
no, I do.
I do,
but
I do.
Why should anyone get the number ahead? I mean, it's clear. you just said it, that you see movement mm-hmm. minutes before it's released to the public. Something's happening. Somebody knows, and people are trading it. Why screw them?
Chief doesn't think it's the reporters that are leaking the number.
Well, I don't think it's reporters per se, yeah. But the less people that know about it, the less opportunity
you have
it has
you
to
have a, yeah. You have a president yesterday.
There you go.
You weren't here yesterday. You have a president that was it Elizabeth Warren yesterday, who I'm not a big fan of, but she was recounting something that Trump was at a dinner the night before the guy got whacked in Iran. This is the same thing that, what's his name? Wayne Madsen was telling us about. That the kids, his two sons, all knew the guy was going to get whacked. So Elizabeth Warren brought up the thing yesterday and said the amount of call options and stock being traded in the defense companies the day before it happened because of Trump basically blowing off his mouth at Mar-a-Lago was dramatic.
I don't doubt that at all.
So here's...
Like I said, no one looks at the Trump administration with less regard than me. So you're preaching to the choir.
So I'm gonna lob three things out there, and this is mm-hmm. this is why I always sound confused, only because I am. We had remember, Maddie, Chris brought that the guy from the agriculture department, and we had him on for a half hour one day. You remember this? And he was talking about when they put their numbers out. And they do the same thing. They bring the reporters into a room, all cell phones, all communication. The room's dead. You couldn't make a call out of the room. However they do that, they jam it. And they bring people in there, and they bring them in like you say, 10 minutes before, everybody gets mm-hmm. the numbers. They get a chance to work on their thing. And he said, anybody who enters the building can't leave for that 10 minutes. Remember the story he told about the guy who was filling up the vending machine? They made the poor guy stay there for a half hour and his truck got towed? Because he was parked in front of the...
Yeah.
Remember that? I mean, if you want to do it, Russell, you can do it.
Yeah.
So now the point is, does anybody really think that the Steve Leisman is leaking this number to somebody?
I don't think he is.
But let me fast forward to two other things.
I don't think anybody is. But
let me fast forward to two other pieces of diverse information that I somehow keep in my cluttered brain.
Mm-hmm.
One was, I'm going to say, Maddie, 2-3 years ago, right when Pedro got booted from being in the press, covering the Fed when Auntie Jeanette didn't like him because he asked about the front running. There was a study from some people overseas, of course, Russell, because you can't trust our people to do squat.
Uh-huh.
There was a group out of Hong Kong that basically said every single one of the Fed announcements is front run. That they have zero security and they must talk to people or something. And of course they're involved with bankers and bankers are the, I mean, is there an honest bank? Well, I'm not going to say that. I just did, but.
You don't think there are people that do a really, really good job just keeping up with what the Fed.
Well, what I'm saying is they said virtually every official announcement is front run. Even to the ones in the middle of the night where somebody gives a speech in Tong Kong or someplace and all of a sudden you see the spoons move 20 points a night. But in the article, they said they also did the same study on the labor numbers. And they could find no hint of front running.
Okay.
So now all of a sudden the administration comes out and is worried about the front running. But here this goes way back a ways. I was always the good son. Actually, my mom was a terrific lady, so it was never like I had to. But we went out to breakfast every Saturday morning for 30 years. So I'm driving to the South Side, and one morning, I might have been going on a Sunday, and it was Face the Nation or whatever those shows are. It was like 6 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday morning. And they had Arthur Burns. Remember him?
Yeah.
He was the Secretary of Treasury and Secretary of State under Reagan.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So this is one of those no-holes-barred interviews. It was almost like you and me doing it. And the guy says, Chairman Burns, I have a question for you. I've always wanted to ask. He goes, it's early in the morning. He goes, when you come up with a number, a labor number, a Fed number, whatever the hell it is, how many people know that number before it's announced? This is 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago. And he goes, funny you should mention that. He said, there's a list of people. He goes, clearly, you don't want somebody asking President Reagan, what about the labor number, and him going, what labor number? I mean, he goes, so there's a few people that need to know a little bit before, people you essentially trust. And he goes, I look at the list and I go, who are all these people? He says, for my first month in office, all I tried to do was get these people who had no business being on there, their names off that list.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, it's the hardest thing I ever did politically, and after a month I gave up. So that little speech 30 years ago, I don't think anything's changed.
No, there are a lot of people in the administration and in government that actually get that number. We know that. I'm gonna do a little. What I'm gonna do is I've got my buddy that gives me short term trading data. I'm gonna go back for like the last 5 years around the employment number and see what the price action is before and see what it is after in the 10-year futures and the S&P futures, and then I'm gonna pay attention to the next few and see if there's more volatility, less volatility, if there's any change whatsoever to the price action. And I will report back.
I will say this as a trader unequivocally. That if you were to give me the next 10 announcements out of the Treasury, or the next 50, that and I could trade 2 minutes ahead of that, I will be, and my clients will be, very wealthy people.
See, I have the other attitude about that. I feel like with some of the numbers you can trade fairly well, but some of them. You know, we go through this where the guys on TV and even ourselves have a difficult time figuring out why the market's reacting in a certain way when we get a certain number. My feeling almost is that if you told me what the exact number was going to be without me having an idea of what the sentiment is around the number, like everybody thinking the employment number's too low, everybody, that sort of thing,
that it's harder to trade around those things than people think.
All right,
it is.
You didn't let me finish.
Oh, well.
What I'm saying is.
You paused.
I paused. Yeah. I had a cough.
Okay.
The Treasury number, I'd be a wealthy man, without question. Labor numbers, I don't think I'd make a dime.
Oh, no. No, I think that's very, and maybe that's why, the academics, the offshore academics, there's a new phrase, the offshore academics weren't able to find anything there, with respect to, I've always felt like the employment number's a big old crapshoot.
I'm gonna say that.
Because there's so much in there.
Well, the estimate is 185. And let's put it this way. You're a bright guy. Uh-huh. 5 minutes before I go, hey, Russell, the number's 150 or it's 220. What are you going to do? I have no idea.
You know what I'm going to do? You know what I'm going to ask? What is the underlying wage number in there? Because everybody's worried about inflation.
Yeah.
That's really what I would be. That's the deal is you don't necessarily, because there's so many components to it. We keep calling it a number. It's really a report with multiple numbers. And that's one of the and now I'm making an argument against my initial opinion on this one. I think that's one of the reasons maybe the reporters need to get hold of it ahead of time, or it is helpful if they do.
I say if you take their phones away from them and give them 5 minutes to read the numbers, because like you say, there's 100 numbers.
Yeah.
I see no problem with that. Now,
or give them all the same bullet points, right? Yeah. You know, right at the time, instead of just making the. I think they're just gonna make them go to the website, which they're just upset about.
But if you tell me that Powell is gonna all of a sudden next speech is gonna mention, wow, this inflation is a little out of hand. We might have to actually raise next month. I know exactly what to do. I want that trade, and I'm gonna short bonds, and I'll be right 999 times out of 1,000. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
We're not even close. The difference since the Fed has become the market. Does anybody really give a rat's behind whether 180,000 or 200,000 people got hired last month? We don't believe the numbers anyway. They're all massaged by a.
If they're way out of line, everybody expects that they're going to get revised.
Right. Yeah. Or that you know, I mean that it's in the adjustment. You know what they don't do anymore. Because Carl was just told ragging big time the other day, because we were having this fight on the radio fight, a little argument. I'm reading my numbers from the A1 report, and he's telling me I got the wrong report. And he faxes me then he comes back and he writes me an email and he goes, Chief, I'm sorry. They took the unadjusted number off the thing. He goes, I see what you're looking at. He goes, me bad. Then he goes, those bleeps. They don't want to give you the unadjusted number.
Mm-hmm.
And when they won't give you what the adjustment is, it's like not giving you a number.
It's just giving you
you won't know the unadjusted number until later.
Right.
So when they come out and say the numbers are 185, the number might be 5.
Yeah, but we got to adjust it.
Yeah, we got to adjust it.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, you're
Did you just join a conference call?
That I know of.
No, that was his call, giving him the heads up for the number that's about to come up at 7:30.
Good Lord.
That is a joke. If anyone, I don't want anybody to.
Well, I mean, I just. There are numbers that. I mean, you give me the Fed number.
At the beginning of this, condescendingly asked me why, like, what I care about it getting leaked, and then went on a 20-minute rant of how you can trade it if you know it. It's like,
what I said is the labor numbers are the ones that.
No, the one we're talking. Yeah, yeah the one we're talking
well,
about
if this is
the
not
one
that, just for the labor number. This is for all sensitive.
It is for
reports.
All of them.
Yeah.
It's just the labor.
The labor number has nothing to do with it.
Well, the labor number is the one that the reporters really care about. And it's because it is by far, first off, it's the first one that gives you a look at the previous month. It comes out, typically it comes out on the first Monday of each month, and it's the first economic number that tells us about activity during the previous month. But beyond that, there's just a wealth of data in it. So, like, I think if you surveyed economists on Wall Street and you said, if you could only look at one report from the government every month, it's the one they would want to look at. That's why we're hanging on this,
which shows you that they've never made a trade in their life.
Yeah,
when you got nothing but Fed governors running around giving you this information about what they're really thinking. I want that speech before it comes out. I don't care about these labor numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think I want Powell's speech next time he comes out in the air before he says it?
Of course you do.
That's where the number is.
Have you ever been at the places that when they give these speeches, that they have a person holding them in a binder that you can't see in until the guy starts speaking?
Oh, okay.
They're really secure about it. I've actually seen the process. They're written out ahead of time. They get released as a press release just as they're starting, and they read word for word from a closed binder. So, if somebody's walking around with the speech in their hand, somebody can't glance at it.
But everything goodness they do. Gracious. What is going on here?
I'm telling you, we've really upset somebody.
Yeah, we did.
I know.
I just,
is it the president?
Maybe it is. Could be Trumpo.
He would have DM'd me on Twitter. Let me check.
That's true. Check your messages.
Okay.
I'm gonna pull a plug out of the back of this thing. The whole idea. Does this mean now that every Fed governor's speech on the road, the thing all has to be posted online? I mean, where were we?
Well, I think they are posted online already. That's the process. That's how the process works. If I'm a Fed governor, and I'd love to be a Fed governor, if I were a Fed governor and I was going to give a speech, at the Economic Club of Chicago, just as I'm starting the speech, it actually gets released. The text gets released to the public, and that's like just an equal dissemination to everybody.
Well, that's not going to happen.
No, it still happens.
But I'm saying the point is, does anybody get it before?
No, well, I mean, the people that helped write it, the handler that's the people that put it in a binder for them. Yeah, there's a handful of people that get it ahead of time, but I don't know if those things get leaked out or not.
Well, how about
yeah, I like to believe that people all behave the way that they're supposed to, but that's just because I'm naive and from Tennessee.
Whatever would make you think that.
Whatever would make me think that everybody's good.
Said he'd like to think it.
I like to think it. I approach everybody with that attitude until they show me differently.
There I was on the
which
train.
Has probably been to a detriment of my whole life.
By the way, I agree with that because I'm in the same boat. But there I was on a trading floor, minding my own business, right? And people really thought that it was pretty cool to be in a competitive area like that where everybody had the same rules, which pretty much 95% of the people, by the way, felt this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a clean game. Okay, you heard the same thing other people heard. You heard the same stuff.
Yeah.
And when there was a guy on the floor allegedly. All right, this is getting too much here. There was a guy who allegedly was in one of the crowds, and his dad went to, they were in one of these boarding schools. I never knew there was such a thing from the Midwest until I got to the floor. With the guy who was ahead of, pick a place, AT&T or IBM or someplace. And the kid in the trading crowd allegedly got the earnings. This is 35 years ago.
Yeah.
Earnings, 20 minutes before anybody else. Cause his dad was a specialist somewhere and, whatever. So he got the number.
Yeah.
And I'm going, what? That pretty much sucks. And I remember the guy in front of me, Kenny Kelly, who went to one of these boarding schools and he hated it. And he goes, Tommy, you just don't understand. I said, enlighten me. He goes, that's why these people go to those schools.
Oh, yeah, it's who you know.
They think that's why you're in that fraternity. That's why you, it's like the judge, the guy who just was elected a Supreme Court judge.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you go to those schools, because the rules don't apply to you. You have a different, I'm not saying he shouldn't have been the judge or anything like that. I'm not getting into that mm-hmm. controversy. But that's why you go to those places. You're having parties at this guy's place. You're the tennis pro at this country club. That those people, you look at the guys that you see, what was it, Geithner, Manny? Was the Secretary of Treasury a while ago, Tim Geithner?
Yeah.
You read his book. After the first chapter, I couldn't wait to burn it. It was every time the kid basically bleeped up in school, the old man, to set him straight, would make him like a Supreme Court justice's clerk that summer. Maybe not that high, but somebody.
Here's the job you got to do.
And like every time, the more he messed up, the higher up the pole he went. And he never had another job other than like Congress and this guy's clerk, that guy's clerk, and all of a sudden the guy's Secretary of Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's you and I are not on that career path, bud. We never were. Doesn't matter whether we might be as smart or actually care more about people. We're just not there. I mean, I don't know how you get there. I mean, I don't want to, but like Lou said the one
Why
day.
Why don't you want to? I like money.
Well, yeah.
I like the proportion of getting money for doing as little as possible.
Well, yeah, but I couldn't hang around with guys like you and Matty. I'd have to hang around with those kind of people.
I know. There's a price for everything.
Well, I'd be the square peg in a round hole in all those places.
Oh, yeah.
I'm bad enough at one of Dr. J's parties, for God's sake.
Yeah. You would be like Van Wilder.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things that I'm not a part of. But to think that people don't think that they deserve, at a point, it's not like this isn't even wrong anymore. No, I deserve this. That's the part you got to be real careful of when you actually get to that point. No, I deserve this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to say.
Nobody wants to hear you say that either.
It's one thing to say you found it on the floor and you read it and go, holy, the kid in the Animal House? This is great. You know, Flounder. It's another thing to actually believe you should get this ahead of time for everybody else. Anyway, SB Futures down 2.25. We're flatlining here before this China thing. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollie, Mr. Russell Rhodes, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We're arguing about who gets to get information faster, and Matty says he'd love to have it.
I wouldn't know what to do with it. I just,
you know guys that do.
I don't have a problem with people not getting it. It just decreases the opportunity for, like, I don't see a downside.
I know what Matt wants. He wants that book from Back to the Future that gives you all the sports results in the future.
Oh yeah, the almanac?
There you go. Yeah, that's what I want too.
I want that.
I could trade that.
Just remember the Twilight Zone episode. Man, he's too young.
Well, when he sees himself in the obituary?
Yeah, he went to tomorrow's newspaper today, and he sees himself in the obituary. that's not good. U.S. producer prices is only up 0.1%. If you believe that one, I got this. Are we selling the Skyway Bridge again? I'll sell it to you. Dow Futures down to... down
second 20. Mortgage on the Skyway Bridge.
S&P Futures down 350. NASDAQ Futures down 1.25. God, I'm cynical this morning. What's the matter with me? Goldman Sachs, who actually beat on the bottom line, is down 246. Apple, which was downgraded yesterday, is up 12 cents. So nothing really moving in the Dow except for Goldman. We got let's go through the rest of the world here, and then we'll do some of the other stuff. DAX down 24. They were flat earlier, but now it's 0.2%. FTSE up 9.1%. CAC around down 13.2. So mixed to nothing there. Down in Asia, but not that much. Nikkei down 108.4%. Shanghai down 17.5%. Hang Seng down 111.4%. Bonds, and again, this is kind of the number here. U.S. 10-year is pretty steady. There's 179, 18, 180, 181, which has been now for really a while, Russell. Bond minus 0.21. It got as low the other day as high. It's hard for me to do the opposite when he sees our negative.
Yeah.
Well, we got as high as 0.17 negative. Where are we at today? I'm going to say Monday morning. Japan, however, is positive by 0.01.
Yay!
It's got to have been a decade, hasn't it? They've been negative?
It's been a long time.
I don't know if it's a full decade or whatever. Mm-hmm. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash that just came across here on the Bishop Ford inbound side at 103rd Street, blocking the right lane. So that's causing some congestion as you're coming in on I-94. Keep that in mind. No issues on the Ryan. Traffic building on the Stevenson near Cicero, but no accidents to report. Eisenhower still looking pretty good. Same with the Edens and Kennedy. That earlier crash on I-355. At 22nd Street is all clear, so that's good news. No other issues on Lakeshore Drive or the suburban tollways. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Dempster and Western Avenue. Out in Carroll Stream, there's a crash Army Trail Road at Bloomingdale Road. Just northwest of there in Hanover Park, Barrington Road at Walnut Avenue, there is a crash. Northern suburbs, Diamond Lake Road at Route 83. And just north of there, US 45 at Holly Street, there is an accident. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, cloudy and hazy and some precipitation in the area. A high of 37. Right now it's overcast and foggy and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 72 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 44. In sports, Blackhawks won up at Ottawa last night, 3-2 in overtime. Coyotes doubled up the Sharks, 6-3. NBA basketball, Bulls are off. They'll welcome the Washington Wizards into town tonight. Suns lost to the Atlanta Hawks, 123-110. College hoops, DePaul lost at number 14 Villanova in overtime, 79-75. Northwestern was blown out at home by Iowa, 75-62. And we have some breaking news, Chief. Chicago Bears great Jimbo Colbert was notified this morning that he will be elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yay.
Absolutely deserved.
He'll be the 29th Chicago Bear to be elected into the Hall of Fame, and they'll be part of a ceremony coming up in September in Canton, Ohio.
I thought he never would because he only played, 9 years?
Yeah, his career was relatively short for an offensive lineman, certainly back then.
Because he had back issues at the end, and with Ditka, who, you know, can be somewhat crazy at times, but is no dummy by any stretch. He said he has nothing more to prove. I mean, he's been the best for so long. If he needs to think of the rest of his life, he's got to quit.
Deserves a lot of credit for Walter Payton's success too.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to have somebody in front of you.
Although I'm going to say he wasn't there for most of Walter's early years.
Not his early years, no, but all of his late 70s or early mid 80s.
Who was
the 80s, I should say.
Who was the left tackle for most of it, the time. I'm going to say Lionel Antoine.
I'd have to look on footballreference.com to get that answer.
But I said, but pick up like Walter Payton's like second or third year, and I'll see if I can, how many of those guys I name. And it was Revisori, Noah Jackson. I'm trying to think who the right tackle was. It was Big Cat Williams was there for a while.
Oh, Big Cat Williams was way later.
But he was before Keith Van Horn, wasn't he? Or was he after?
He was after.
All right.
Big Cat was in the 90s.
Okay, I want you to dig through that a little bit. Hey, I was a little bit remiss when I said not much is moving. Target down $9.
Target.
It's getting its butt kicked here. It's a 116.74, actually now only down 8.32. But this stock was $70 last June. It's had nothing but on a tear. I mean, it's had two earnings in a row where it's totally gapped up. One of them was like last September of 19. It gapped up from like 75 to 85 or 90 in one shot. And then it gapped up again in December. But now today it's gapping the other way a little bit. Plunge on his holiday sales, missed estimates on weakness in toys and electronics. So there you have it.
So the 1975 Chicago Bears, that was Walter Payton's rookie year. A great team. They went 4-10.
Yeah.
Their starting offensive line, left tackle, Lionel Antoine, left guard, Noah Jackson, center, Dan Pfeiffer, or Peffer, right guard, Mark Norquist, and then right tackle, Jeff Sevy.
Jeff Sevy, wow, I've forgotten that name.
Yeah, that was their...
No, I noticed they got Revisori like a year or two later.
Revisori, let's see here. I thought I saw his name. Maybe he was not a starter yet, but maybe not.
And I forget who the right tackle was most of the time because they drafted Dennis Lick and he didn't last very long.
76 Bears, right tackle was still Jeff Sevy. Revisori started at right guard in 76. Dan Neal was the center.
Dan Neal was the center for a long time.
Yeah, Noah Jackson still at left guard and Lionel Antoine still at left tackle. 77. The Bears...
Dan Neal was a big man. He's way bigger than Hilgenberg. Big guy.
Finally start winning. They go 9-5, second in the NFC Central. It was the Central back then. Left tackle is now Ted Albrecht. Left guard, Noah Jackson still. Center still is Dan Pfeiffer again. Right guard, Revisori. And right tackle, Dennis Lick.
Yeah, he only lasted like a year or two. He blew out his knee.
Yeah.
Well, now, there was a guy that... I'll be an exaggeration here. Ted Albrecht was a... somewhat marginal left tackle. If he'd have played his career as a guard, he'd have been, you know, all pro half the time.
78 Bears back the 78, the first year that what happened in 78? That was the big change in the NFL.
Is that when they moved the goalpost?
No, when they went to 16 games.
They went to 16 games from 14. So
not bad for me.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The Bears go 7-9, so they suck as usual. left tackle, Ted Albrecht. Left guard, Noah Jackson. Noah Jackson played a long time at left guard. Wow. Dan Neal at center, Revisori at right guard, and Dennis Lick at right tackle. 79 Bears. Now we're starting to win. 10-6 in 79. Left tackle, Ted Albrecht. Left guard, Noah Jackson. Center, Dan Neal. Right guard, Revisori. Right tackle, Dennis Lick. Nothing changed. And then you get into the 80s, and Bears kind of take off.
They drafted... Well, Colbert was somewhere.
They had the same guys in 1980 as well. 81.
When did they grab Van Horn? Must have been 81, 82.
81 is when Van Horn takes over at right tackle. And then it's Emmanuel Zanders at right guard. Dan Neal still at center. Noah Jackson still at left guard. And Ted Albrecht still at left tackle. 82. That was a strike year. The Bears went 3-6.
Yeah.
In 82. Phil McKinley at left tackle. Noah Jackson still at left guard. Dan Neal still at center. Jeff Williams at right guard. And Keith Van Horn at right tackle. So it must have been 83. 83 is when Jimbo Colbert took over at left tackle.
Well, rookie. That's when they stole Tam Thayer.
And Thayer definitely didn't start in 83.
He didn't maybe start the season, but he... But
they had Hilgenberg on the bench. He didn't start either.
What's the year they won? 84, right?
No, the 85 season, 86 Super Bowl.
Okay.
83, they went 8-8. And then in 84, they went 10-6 and was the beginning of their winning years. Jimbo Colbert at left tackle. Mark Bortz at left guard, Jay Hilgenberg at center, Kurt Becker at right guard, Keith Van Horn at right tackle.
What year was Thayer? Because he played, to this day, he played more football games in like a 12-month period than anybody else. I mean, he had a senior year at Notre Dame, and the Bears drafted him in like the second or third round. I'm going to say maybe the third round.
Thayer didn't start until 85 when they went 15-1 and won the Super Bowl.
When did he get drafted?
That was the first year he started. He was a rookie. He was drafted in 85.
Okay, so he sort of wasn't really a rookie.
The 91st pick in the fourth round.
But he, and the Bears drafted him. They thought they got a steal.
You're right. They drafted him in 83, but he didn't make his rookie debut until 85 season.
He played for the Arizona Wranglers.
Oh, so he played the Spring League?
Yeah, he played the Spring League.
Ah.
I think he played Notre Dame in the fall, then the Arizona Wranglers in the spring, because I met him down there in Scottsdale. Him and all his guys came in all trashed one night at this one biggest human beings I've ever seen. That's back when I was still 6'4". This guy walked in. He was a left tackle. The guy, he had to be 6'7". His shoulders were as wide as his room. And then there was this old guy, Carl Lorich, that was like Thayer's kind of drinking buddy. And the two of them were doing the forearm shivers in the bar. They would have sent a normal human being like through the window, right? And Tommy is this massive guy at the time. He looked like a Magilla gorilla. I mean, his chest from front to back had to be a foot and a half thick. I mean, just a massive man. I mean, now he's a lot thinner. And Tommy, he's a real nice guy even then. I mean,
Tom Thayer is a real nice guy. Of course, the radio analyst on BBM for the Bears games. But yeah, it says here he was drafted in the fourth round of that 83 NFL draft, but did not make his rookie appearance in the NFL until age 24 in the 1985 season.
He must have played 2 years for the Wranglers.
Yeah, he must have. He started as a rookie, a 24-year-old rookie at right guard for the 85 team that was obviously
a hell of a player.
Just loaded. Jimbo Colbert was – their offensive line was young, too. You had Colbert at 25. You had Bortz at 24, Hilgenberg at 26, Thayer at 24 as a rookie, and then Van Horn was the old guy at 28.
Well, Tommy was fast as hell for a man that size.
Yeah, and they just built that offensive line with a couple of first-round picks and then a couple of other high picks. They were young, and they were healthy, and they were good. And the Bears went 15-1. Obviously the defense gets all the credit and should for the most part, but that offensive line was pretty damn good.
Well, yeah, I mean, and you had Willie Gault, you had Walter Payton. It wasn't like you had a bunch of schlumps on offense.
Right, Jim McMahon was healthy the whole year.
Yeah,
or most of the year. Dennis McKinnon.
But I mean, the Wranglers. I mean, I don't think anybody, as Pete Majerian refers to it, nobody had a P in that league.
Right.
But Tommy played. Right out of Notre Dame, he played that spring. Then he must have played another spring. Then he went right from playing there 2 years in the pro. And there's no doubt he walked right into the Bears in a starting spot. And he was a star in that league. But that league only lasted 2 years, right? I think.
I don't know anything about that league.
Pete played
about the USFL.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know like Trump had a team. I know like a few of the facts. I know that some of the players was Steve Young one of the big guys that went there briefly? And
there was a handful of
big big time guys that went to try to drive up their contract.
I know Reggie White played for the Memphis team.
I was born in 1983, so that was a little before my time.
I got punched in the face by Reggie White at a bar.
Jesus.
What?
When he was with the Memphis Showboats. It's out there. I worked at the bar, and somebody said something very negative to him, and he started beating the crap out of the guy. And on a backswing, he caught me right square in the face when I was one of five people trying to pull him off of the guy.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I got a note from him somewhere that he signed that said, "Thanks for all the help." I've got that somewhere, but yeah, my ears rang for about 4 or 5 days after that one.
Well, Pete was on Pete was on the Sacramento team, Pete Najarian, and he was one of the first guys that they had the helmet camp.
Oh, cool!
Because Pete was playing the linebacker, so John said, "Hey, we got to watch Pete. He's wearing a helmet clamp." So we were glued to the TV watching. I don't know where the hell we had to go to watch that game. I don't think it was on at home. We went somewhere to watch, and there was Pete. Like run into this guy, bang! All of a sudden, the camera would go blank. And stuff.
Is Pete still alive?
Pete's still alive. But he was in Sacramento for like a year or two with those guys, and I think he said they were some of the biggest humans he's ever met. Because evidently, you could bring in your own sample, right? So
yeah,
he said they would go to they would meet at the Waffle House, and everybody'd like pee for the guys. They'd bring in somebody else's stuff. Good Lord. You could, Manny, can you, the human condition never changes, does it?
Apparently not.
But anywho, all right, Russell.
Yes.
Economy, we got stuff happening. We've got the Fed. We had one of my, as a listener, and he sends me some interesting stuff from time to time, claims that a lot of what's going on with the Fed and pouring money into the system is that the European Central Bank, again, this is one person's opinion, European Central Bank is very concerned about the U.S. deflating the currency. So they have,
they
basically have told their banks to not buy U.S. Treasuries in the same size they've been. So there's without that kind of float, the Federal Reserve has become the Fed funds market, essentially.
Okay.
I don't know if I buy that.
You know, the one thing that I could see is I think Europe is in a more precarious situation than we are, and I think they have less ability to deal with it than we do. So, but on the other side of it is, I honestly don't think that the current administration cares about other economies like previous administrations have.
But you can't, no matter whether you care or you don't, you must recognize how tied they all are together.
Oh, come on now. You're giving a lot of credit there.
But I mean, it's not, that's what I don't, yeah. I mean, if other than personality, and people that I know that have done work for the man and not getting paid.
Well, that's because they did shoddy work.
Yeah,
that's what
right.
he says.
Yeah, my biggest complaints with the dude are in my area. Now, I don't really know the defense and all the other stuff. I don't know those people. I mean, I honestly don't know. I got to believe he knows more about what's going on in Iraq than I do. I mean, I sure hope so. And how am I going to know? But on the, I don't think economically the man thinks on three chessboards. I mean,
okay,
you. I mean,
no, I agree with you. I'm not dismissing that one.
Well, I'm saying I don't see how when you have how many people were supposed to be in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, like 50 some?
Mm-hmm.
Was it that many countries? Was it 50 or 20? It was a lot of countries.
Yeah. The smaller ones over there.
But how you pull out of that and say we're going to have one with everybody individually, we're going to try and screw them one after another.
Mm-hmm.
How can that even be? I mean, okay, we'll drive a ship by Vietnam, we'll wave, and we'll say it came from Vietnam. I mean, either everybody's in or nobody's in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see how you could have one deal with Thailand, one deal with Vietnam, one deal with China, when you know everybody's trading back and forth. And in this day and age, I mean, even the stuff with the automobiles, with Canada and Mexico. I mean, what are we talking about? We're assembling the truck in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
But the motors are made in where?
Everything's coming from everywhere else.
Everywhere else. And some of the stuff, I mean, there's got to be transmission parts made in Canada. The transmission's assembled here. The transmission goes back to Canada. I mean, this is all so interwoven. How do you pull it out and say, we're getting screwed or you're getting screwed on this particular... I mean, I think that the way we're getting screwed is that the China and Mexico deals were somehow or another... The people over there are not getting paid. And we're just like Carl talks about all the time. We're essentially offshoring our child labor and our pollution.
Oh, yeah.
And to the extent we're doing that, I mean, I think that pretty much sucks. Now, the way it was supposed to be, you being an economic professor, is by now the people in China are supposed to be making, you know, $6 an hour. Not, you know, and I'm not
They're
saying
supposed
25.
To be closer to what we're.
Right.
What
and all of a sudden we have a billion customers over there that we're shipping so much stuff over there, we're making stuff so fast we can't even see ourselves.
Right.
That was the way the plan was supposed to be, and it sort of hasn't worked out that way. Clearly with Mexico it hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, the people are still making $3 an hour than they were 15 years ago. Why is that?
I think Mexico's in better shape than they were 15 years ago. I really do. I think, and especially like places like Monterey that are kind of close to the United States.
Don't disagree.
I mean, I do think that they're, but I don't think they're that things have come up to the level that we had hoped. But I do think that things have gotten. I do think things have gotten better there. You don't have people from Mexico trying to cross into the United States for better opportunities. It's really people from the other side of Mexico that are doing that now. So I do think that that's worked to a certain point.
Well, I
do.
In China, though, there's no doubt that we're making millionaires over there every day.
Oh yeah,
but I think they're the people that are in the government putting their thumb on the workforce. It's not the guy we want to see do better is the guy who's making the tablet, right?
You know, both China and Russia's shift from central planning to more of an open market has been fraught with the who you know. Well, here, in the United States, there is the who you know advantage versus the what you know, but what the you know can get you farther here than I think it can in those two places.
Oh, I don't disagree at all. I mean,
and I can't see how the who you know people are ever gonna allow the what you know people to get theirs.
Well, the head of the KGB just became Al Capone. What's the difference?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, every one of those. Look at Putin, for God's sake.
Oh, God, yeah. We had a guy speak at the CFA annual dinner here in Chicago that just talked about how, you know, if you actually did start to get ahead, if you didn't become Putin's buddy by basically giving him and his guys a lot of money, they're going to kick you out or put you in jail or even worse. And the who you know is going to take your stuff.
I think it's according to Lewis.
And the problem is, in both situations, it happened to Russia because they've been down this path a little bit longer. It catches up with you. And I think it's going to catch up with China. And unfortunately, we're so tied in with them, I think it's going to hurt us as well. Like everything like that, like you talking about inflation, it just takes a lot longer for these things to play out than from when we expect them to play out.
Well, if we're looking for economically driven regime change in China, we've been looking for it for 40 years.
Right, right. And they and what China's been able to do, I think, is they've been able to reform just enough to keep the unwashed masses at bay and keeping them under control. Things have gotten, you know, somewhat progressively better. Just to the point where people aren't complaining about it. You know, the whole Tiananmen Square thing was really about college students worried about their economic opportunities more than anything else, and they squished that, but they also started to make some reforms in, I think, really in response to that.
Well, maybe
wars, Hong Kong will be a catalyst.
How many wars have been fought in the name of religion but really were for economics?
Most.
Manny Weber's the only guy I know that actually thinks the Trojan War was because of a pretty girl.
Well, you know, I think the thing that actually breaks my heart about the Middle East is when you see pictures of what, like, Afghanistan and Iran were like in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where they, you know, you couldn't really tell them apart from Rome.
Right.
You know, I mean, the things have taken a direction where people that don't really want economic progress have taken over and squashed everything down, and there's a whole lot of hopelessness there. You can say that what is done in the name of the religions over there is really a function of the lack of economic opportunities, period. You know, I mean, that your whole life is going to be not a really pleasant experience. And well, when that happens, you start looking around and pointing fingers, and we're a great place to blame for that. Somebody in the Obama administration was criticized heavily for saying that terrorism, if we could just find these people jobs, that terrorism might be diminished. And I really, they got criticized for it, but I really think they had a point behind
that.
Sure
they did. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they said it too simplistically. I think if you say, if those countries were like they were in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, places that, you know, that had modern conveniences and people looked like they were enjoying their day-to-day lives, we wouldn't have the issues that we have now, but we do.
There's maybe a fork in the road there. Mm-hmm. You always say, if you come to a fork in the road, take it.
Yep.
I think the religious, there are some incredibly fervent people, mostly in the Muslim religion. Now, there's a bazillion people in there, so
yeah,
it's not like every result. But I mean, if you do the math, if
there's a billion of them, there's not. They're not all.
If 5% of people think that jihad is okay, and every there should be no such thing as a secular government, you're talking about millions of people.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not like it's one or two.
And those are the guys you really don't want to cross.
Right. And those are, then you have a problem with that. Yeah. I mean, they actually think that the secular area is a sin. Well, then that's a problem, because the rest of the world has moved on from that,
yeah,
pretty much. But I would say that one of the things in this electronic world, I don't see how in God's name, and I mean, I don't, you know, a lot of our president people, in this day of electronic warfare, the ability to have electronic warfare in your own citizens. I mean, hell, if we were in Tehran, people listen to this podcast, you and I, hey, what happened to Russell and Chief? We can't find him at lunch. We'd be gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, plus, it's not like we can grab a musket like we could in 1865 and be the equal of a British soldier. Mm-hmm. Those guys have electronic warfare. They got planes. They got tanks. And you and I got nothing. I mean, yeah. Regime change is a lot harder than maybe it used to be. So,
oh,
I mean, it's S&P futures down 775 now. NASDAQ futures down 13. We just dropped. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.